And well, the screen brightens up. You guys can see a general shadow, and as we go through the review, that may be enough. Okay. So last time we were digging into this discontinuous conduction mode, DCM. We motivated that by looking at a buck converter and saying, okay, we know how to calculate things like average current in the inductor and ripple current on the inductor, delta IL. So let's look at a couple of load cases at heavy load, which is small resistance, lots of power going to the load. We see our normal waveforms and we're happy. As the load decreases, which is an increase in resistance, decrease the output power. See, gradually, if I kind of did this in steps from 1 ohm, 2 ohm, 3 ohm, 4 ohm, as I'm increasing that resistance, the average inductor current is going to drop to deliver less power to the load. Eventually, it's going to hit a point where that ripple is going to cause my inductor current to go negative under this analysis. And in the implementation with a diode, like we have in the original schematic there, that can't happen. So at some point, we're going to hit a load resistance where the operation mode is going to change. The inductor current ripple is going to cause the current to hit zero, which point the diode turns off. And then our converter is fundamentally operating different than what we assume in CCM. Okay. We have some uncontrolled switching action, isn't controlled by the signal going to the MOSFET, and it's going to change the behavior. So we looked at two different ways of defining where this limit is. And the idea behind both of them is, well, we already know how to solve everything about the converter when it's in CCM, continuous conduction mode, when this uncontrolled diode shutoff isn't happening. So start by just assuming it's in CCM, solve the ripple and the average value of the current. And if the ripple is greater than the average value, that means at some point that current's hitting zero or going negative. And then you've got kind of a contradiction to your assumption. Assume it's not, solve. If you find this contradiction, that means it's in DCM. Okay. So we can do that by comparing K and K crit, where K is this 2L over RTS. That's going to be the same thing for buck boost. And then K crit is some function of duty cycle that depends on the specific converter we're looking at. We can also do a similar thing with R and R crit, where R is the load resistance, R is always R, and R crit is going to be some expression with this 2L over TS, and then some kind of duty cycle type term in there. That's going to depend on the topology as well. Okay, so that'll tell us whether or not we're in DCM, and then how do we analyze the converter if we are? Okay, so it's going to be theoretically no difference from what we were doing before, practically kind of some minor tweaks. Okay, so these things, volt second balance, cap charge balance, are going to still apply. When we derive these for volt second and cap charge balance proper, we made no approximations about the converter other than that we're assuming we're in steady state, which isn't really an approximation. It's just defining what we're solving. We're solving the behavior in steady state. Okay. So these are true in steady state without approximation. Where we did make an approximation was the small ripple approximation, which made evaluating these integrals very easy. We knew small ripple approximation, everything looks like square waves, and we don't ever need to take an integral. We can just kind of look at it and write down, okay, average voltage on the inductor is dVg minus d prime v for some converter. We're implicitly taking that integral, doing the integral, dividing by TS, but you guys have enough experience that you can just write the final expression. When the small ripple approximation doesn't apply, we're going to have to back up and actually take these integrals with time-varying waveforms. Okay? So the small ripple approximation, we're now just going to have to be careful with. It's still going to apply when it makes sense to apply it, but it's not going to apply when something has a ripple greater than its average value. So for example, in this buck, we can still apply it on the output voltage. I haven't, I gave some values back on this example, but we never really gave a value for the capacitor. But it's going to be generally a safe assumption that small ripple applies on your output capacitor because you're trying to create a DC output voltage. That's necessary. That's going to interfere with your load if you allow large ripple at the output, and you're really creating an inverter instead of a DC to DC converter if you allow small ripple at the output to not apply. But now it's not going to apply on the inductor current. Inductor current in general is something purely internal to our converter, right? The load will see the output voltage. It'll have a current V over R, and if V is constant, it has constant voltage, constant current going to the load. The inductor current is just something inside our converter. So it's possible that we could go into an operating mode where that inductor current has large ripple, but still be a valid, a good converter, still producing DC output voltage. That's going to happen in DCM, and we're no longer going to be able to apply small ripple to the inductor current because a ripple is greater than the average value. And the assumption on small ripple was the ripple is small relative to the average value. Most of the converters we'll look at in your homework, this is going to be the case. This is not necessarily always the case. Things like the Tuke converter have a DCM mode where that internal capacitor has large ripple that causes a forward biasing above body diode. So small ripple still applies to all the inductors, but the internal capacitor does not. This isn't always true. You have to think about what is the thing that has large ripple. Don't apply small ripple to that thing. Okay. So once we recognize that, then we can go back and do kind of our normal analysis, just doing volt second and cap charge balance on all of our filter elements. So an example of that, we're going to look at the buck converter in DCM. The DCM mode that we're talking about is the one that we looked at in the previous slide with these plots. So delta IL has become greater than IL, pushing us into DCM. The inductor current hits zero and the diode shuts off. But we're going to assume delta VC is still much less than the output voltage. We still have a good, well-regulated output voltage on this converter. Okay. And again, we talked about this somewhat early in the class when we first introduced small ripple. So that we're assuming that we're going to design this well, right? This isn't necessarily true. My output capacitor is 1 pico and my switching frequency is 10 hertz. I'm going to have huge ripple at the output, but that's a bad design, so we don't care to analyze it. We're assuming we're going to do a good job and select the right capacitor and switching frequency to make this true by design. Okay. So now, different than in CCM, we're going to have 3 subintervals instead of 2. Our first 2 are the same. So I've got subinterval when Q1 is on, subinterval when D1 is on, and then subinterval 3 where neither Q1 nor D1 on. They're both off. Okay. So subinterval 1, I can no longer talk about D and D prime because I have 3 subintervals now. So I'm going to call these, this subinterval will go on for D1 TS, subinterval 2 for D2 TS, subinterval 3 for D3 TS. And I apologize, let's call this DA instead of D1 for the diode, just so I'm not conflicting with my notation on duty cycle. So briefly before we get into this, D1 TS is going to be what we control. So this duty cycle is D1 is the time that the MOSFET is on. So I'm going to have some PWM signal that my controller generates that tells the MOSFET how long to stay on. So I have complete control over that. Then D2 and D3 are kind of uncontrolled times. I'm controlling TS, but how much of the duty cycle is D2 and D3? Well, the sum of them is 1 minus D1, but I don't know how much. It depends on just how long it takes the inductor current to ramp down to zero. So those are unknowns initially. D1, something I have to make a decision on to get this converter to turn on. I have to set a D1 and start turning the MOSFET on. Okay, so breaking these three equivalent circuits for my three subintervals apart, I'm going to write the equations for in each, the voltage on the inductor and the current in the capacitor. And as we do, we'll think about where can we apply small ripple. Okay. So starting at the top, subinterval 1, the voltage on my inductor within this subinterval, V sub L of T, is going to be Vg minus V of T as normal. And as normal, small ripple is going to apply to V of T, as discussed. So I can, by small ripple, say this is a good approximation to say this is Vg minus V. My small ripple approximation does apply to V sub C. Now for the current in the capacitor, I sub C, that's going to be equal to KCL right here, I sub L of T minus V of T over R. And that's approximately equal to I sub L of T minus V over R. So the small ripple approximation I can apply to the output voltage, but cannot to the inductor current. So this thing is going to remain some time-varying quantity in here. Okay, subinterval 2, MOSFET shuts off, diode turns on, change my circuit, so write my new expression. V sub L is now 0 on the left, V of T on the right, small ripple applies to V, I'm going to have minus V. I sub C is going to be same thing. If I do KCL right here, nothing's changed, still the same expression. And this interval continues when I'm in DCM until the inductor current ramps down to zero, at which point I get this passive turn off of the diode, and I go into this circuit where neither the MOSFET nor the diode are on. Now, what's the voltage on the inductor? Y zero? In general, it's whatever our switch node voltage is, minus V. I don't know what the switch node voltage is, it's just floating. We have one answer is zero. Why is it zero? The switching node is zero, then I have minus V applied across the inductor. Right, so KVL around this loop tells me definitely V sub L is equal to V switch minus output voltage.
And then from the previous cycle, you built up minus V charge across the inductor, right?
Charge across the inductor. The answer is zero. How do we know that? There's no current in the inductor, right? So the way we got into this interval is the inductor current ramped down to zero and the diode shut off, right? And the inductor current is going to remain zero for this entire interval. If I had anything other than 0 volts on it, then I'd have an LDIDT, the current would be changing, and I'd run into some contradiction, right? So it has to be zero. The switch node voltage, even though it's just floating here, you're going to end up with the voltage across the switch node to maintain zero current in the inductor because it can't flow current anywhere. Okay. Exactly how that happens has to do with those capacitors that we talked about in terms of loss mechanism, is that this current will actually go a little bit below zero to pull current from this node, charge these capacitors up to V, and then steady out there. That all happens instantaneously from the perspective of D and D prime, or D1 and D2. But has to be, for this circuit to work, V sub L of T is zero. Okay. Along those same lines, I sub C of T, well, if I do a KCL right here, this node again hasn't changed, so it's still I sub L of T minus V over R. And it so happens that I sub L of T is equal to zero in this interval. So the actual current is going to be just V over R. But this expression is still fine and correct. It still is the sum of zero and minus V over R. So it is, the current here is this current minus this current. But since this is open, this has to be zero. Okay, now I'm going to take what I've written for each subinterval. I'm going to go to the next slide and I'm going to plot these things. So what I'm going to plot is the voltage on the inductor and the current in the inductor. So first, voltage. I have three subintervals per period. TS, D1 TS, and this time is D1 plus D2 TS. Get to there, I need to go through the first two subintervals. Subinterval 1, 2, and 3. So the voltage on the inductor, what did we write? Vg minus V minus V, 0. So I can now do my inductor volt second balance. And this one is going to look just normal, same as we did in CCM. I'm going to have a different expression, but I don't have to do anything differently because all of my VGs and Vs, small ripple approximation, applied. So I take this integral over the whole thing. The TS is canceled out. And what I'm going to get is D1 times VG minus V minus D2V. And then I can rearrange here. Say this looks like D1VG minus D1 plus D2 times V, or V over VG is going to be equal to D1 over D1 plus D2. So here's the equation contributed by my volt second balance. And I haven't yet solved the conversion ratio because D2 is some unknown. Depends on how long it took the inductor current to ramp down to zero. D1 I know in control, D2 I still have to solve. Okay. Now, I'm going to plot the inductor current, and when I'm in this DCM mode, what I know is that over here in D3, the inductor current went to zero and stayed there. So the start of the period, if I'm in steady state, the inductor current is going to be at zero. During this interval, it's going to ramp up the slope of Vg minus V over L to some peak value that I'll call I peak. During the D2 subinterval, it's going to ramp back down all the way to zero, slope of minus V over L. And this interval is going to last exactly as long as it takes for this current to hit zero, at which point the diode passively shuts off, and I just sit and wait for the rest of the period. Okay, so now I want to apply cap charge balance. Average current in the capacitor is zero. Current in the capacitor was IL minus V over R, IL minus V over R, IL minus V over R. And thing through all three intervals, which is nice because now I only have to write one, evaluate one integral. If I looked at and plot it down here, what does the capacitor current look like? Well, it's always IL minus V over R. IL happens to be zero here, but doesn't change anything, so it's going to look like IL shifted down by V over R, right? Capacitor current will look something like this. This is minus V over R. Whenever IL is zero, it's down at minus V over R, and it goes up to I peak minus V over R. If I did a better job of drawing this, we know that the average has to be zero. If I kind of took the integral, all this should be canceled out by the rest of the integral. All the shaded area, positive and negative, should sum to zero. Yeah. So
interval 3,
in interval 3, the current through the load is not zero. No. I still have voltage on the output. Right. So here, interval 3, I have zero current coming in from the inductor, but I still have V over R going to the load. Right. Right. There's 0 volts here, but I'm connected to an open, so that doesn't tell me anything about what this voltage is, and I know this is well designed. This voltage has to stay D, has to still be able to control this and regulate it to DC. Okay. So this is where it gets into the mindset of averages versus instantaneous, right? So on average, the current coming in here to the cap has to be equal to the current going out. That's cap charge balance. But instantaneously, they can be completely different. Here's zero and V over R. They can be anything instantaneously as long as over one period, the current going into the cap and the current coming out of it average to zero. Okay. All right, so that's my capacitor current. So if I want to apply cap charge balance, I'm going to need to actually just take this integral. So the average capacitor current is 1 over Ts times the integral from 0 to Ts of I sub C of T d dt. And I can simplify my work a little bit by saying I sub c is always equal to I sub L of t minus V over R. And then split this apart to the integral of V over R and the integral of I sub L. Integral of V over R with respect to time is just constant. So it's going to be V over R Ts. And then I divide by Ts. So I'll get 0 is equal to this integral minus V over R, evaluating the integral on that second term. Let's see here, I should integral with that whole thing, dt. Now it's just the integral of I sub L over the period. And I can evaluate that integral by looking at my plot here and finding the area under the curve. Right. I'm going to rearrange a little bit. I'll move this minus V over R to the left. Say V over R is equal to this integral. And then I'm going to evaluate this integral 1 over Ts times this area. That is the area of a triangle, which looks like 1/2 base times height. I'm going to have 1/2 the base. This distance is going to be d1 plus d2 times ts. That spans both of the first two subintervals. And the height I called I peak. That doesn't particularly help me since I peak is just something I added here, an extra variable, but we can pretty easily solve that I peak. If I know, for example, in this interval, the slope and the time, that value is slope times time, right? I could say I peak is equal to VG minus V over L times D1 TS. And then plug that in down here. Gonna give me, can I fit it? V over R is equal to 1 over Ts, 1/2 D1 plus D2 Ts, gonna be close. VG minus V over L is D1 Ts. Get V over R out of here. Okay. And this stuff, then, in particular, the bottom one is my solution from cap charge balance. It gives me an expression that tells me what the load current is. Now, if I want to solve, for example, the conversion ratio, again, still don't know what this D2 is. But down here, I have an expression which has D2 and then circuit parameters and V. So if I solve this whole thing for D2, plug it back into that, I'll eliminate D2 and have only knowns and have my conversion ratio in a form that I can define. Okay, that's a bunch of algebra. So that I can get to another example, I'm going to skip over it. So these are the two equations we just derived on the previous slide. My conversion ratio with D2 still in it, then this load current. If I solve for D2, plug it back into the first one, what I get is, in general, going to be a quadratic that I solve with the quadratic formula. I get an answer that looks like this, and here they've done this substitution, 2L over RTS, going to show up here, 2L over TS in this R. that's K from what we defined earlier, talking about the limits of when this goes into DCM, simplifies the expression a little bit. Right? So that gives me my conversion ratio. Look at what this means. Here's a plot from the book. Looks at the conversion ratio of the buck converter for differing values of K and jumping between operating modes. Okay. So I'm in CCM when K is greater than K crit. K is this 2L over RTS, which depends on my design, what I selected for L and the switching frequency, and the load condition. My output resistance R is not something I can design. It's a specification. This converter needs to work with load resistance in this range, but I don't know what the load is doing that changes dynamically. Switching frequency and inductance, I have full control over always. Okay. So if I'm at an operating point and I have a design such that K is greater than 1, then for any duty cycle, K is greater than K crit. D can only go between 0 and 1. That's this curve here. K is greater than or equal to 1. My M of D looks like the CCM solution, right? Buck in CCM, D over VG is equal to D. That's that line. Okay. As K reduces, either because R increases, my load changes for the same design, or if I did a different design and had smaller inductance or smaller switching frequency, I'm no longer going to have K greater than K crit. And now my conversion ratio is the DCM solution, which is these curves for a few different values of K. You see, this is going to make a change in your control. The same duty cycle, example 0.5, may result in very different conversion ratios, with very different output voltages, whether I'm in CCM or DCM, different loading conditions. If I want a 2-to-1 converter, I can't just say set D to 0.5. I have to have some feedback that would recognize when it goes into DCM to start changing the duty cycle. I want to keep a 0.5 conversion ratio. I'd have to drop the duty cycle as my load drops in order to keep the output voltage regulated. Okay. So another case for why we need control with the beginning of the course, we said that was true. We've looked at, okay, when you include losses, your actual conversion ratio isn't quite your ideal one. It's a little bit off. Maybe we need a little bit of control to make sure to account for that. Instead of D being 0.5, it needs to be 0.51. When I go into DCM, I could have a really big change. I need control to account for that if I want to regulate the output. Okay, one more example. Do the boost converter. We're going to look at this operating in DCM. Same assumptions are going to apply, that when I care about DCM, my inductor current average value is less than its ripple, but I'm still going to assume the output voltage is DC. Small ripple still applies on the output capacitor. Here from the book, previous solution for inductor current ripple and average value, my normal analysis in CCM. So when it goes into DCM, I can figure that out by comparing these two. CCM for average value greater than the ripple, which looks like plugging these things in, VG over D prime squared R is greater than VG over 2L DTS. And then eliminate VGs on both sides and rearrange this equation to look like 2L over RTS greater than D prime squared. This inequality will tell me when I'm in CCM. The alligator turns the other way, that's when I'm in DCM. This is my K. This is my K crit of D for the boost. It's a different expression than it was for the buck, but still some function of the duty cycle D. Okay. That's my operating mode boundary. This looks like if I plot duty cycle versus this K crit of D, ends up being a bit of a weird curve here that has some peak around K crit of D is 427. There's not really any significance to why that ends up being that number, but this curve tells us something. So for varying duty cycles, my K crit of D can only go up to 427. So if I have a converter where K is greater than 427, then for any duty cycle, my converter is going to be in CCM. K drops down to something smaller, either because my design changes or my load resistance goes up. Then for varying duty cycles, I'm going to jump between modes. It'll be CCM and DCM and CCM. What operating mode I'm in depends on the duty cycle. Okay, analysis of this. Again, we break it apart into three subintervals. Get Q1 on, DA on, and then Q1 and DA off. Can write our inductor voltage and capacitor current equations for each of these three subintervals. And this one will be a little bit more interesting than the buck. So the voltage on my inductor, just do that in all three subintervals. First subinterval, it's VG. Second subinterval, it's VG minus V with the small ripple applies. Third subinterval, what is it? Has to be zero, same argument as previously. I have an open in series with it. This current has dropped to zero, and the only way it can stay there is if I have 0 volts across it. I try to put any other voltage, it's going to be developing current. Right. So it is going to pull this floating node to VG so that it can maintain zero current. Okay. Capacitor current equal to, in this subinterval, minus V over R. In this subinterval, cannot apply small ripple approximation to the inductor in DCM. So it's going to be time-varying inductor current minus V over R. And then in the third subinterval, my diode shuts off. I have an open here, so it goes back to minus V over R. Okay, so as we plot these things, voltage on the inductor, get what I just wrote back. Is going to be VG minus V, zero. Inductor current then ramp up the slope, VG over L, ramp down to zero, slope of VG minus V over L, and then sit there for all of the third subinterval. Okay, volt second balance. Average voltage on the inductor is zero. And on this one, small ripple applied to everything. So I can quickly write it. This is going to look like D1 plus D2 times VG minus D2 V. My V over VG is going to look like D1 plus D2 over D2. And say the problem, that's only giving me an intermediate expression. I still have D2 as part of this. D2 is generally an unknown till I go and solve for it. Then we're going to apply cap charge balance. And this one is a bit more interesting. The average current in the capacitor is zero. The current in the capacitor was minus V over R, minus V over R, minus V over R. I'll always have this minus V over R constant term in the average. And then I have the inductor current only during subinterval two. Okay. So this is going to look like minus V over R plus integral of the inductor current only during subinterval two, should be from D1 TS to D1 plus D2 TS. Only this piece of the inductor current now. Well, that piece of the inductor current is during subinterval two when the diode's on, is the inductor current that gets through the diode to the output. If I plot the diode current itself, it looks like zero in the first and third subintervals because it's off, and then the inductor current during the second subinterval. In both cases, let's again call this I peak. Excuse me, I forgot my 1 over TS, my averaging here. So I can rewrite this expression. Average current in the capacitor, zero. And that's this constant thing plus average current through the diode, which is the same thing. The integral of the inductor current divided by TS to average it over a whole period, right? Why does that make sense? Well, it's doing an averaged KCL right here. So here, average I sub C is equal to averaged I sub D minus average V over R. On averaging over a whole period, I don't care when things are switching and not. I'm just saying the average current that comes into the cap and the average current that goes out of the cap are equal. Okay. So I can simplify a bit by just finding this average diode current. That again is going to be area under the curve here, which is the same area as the other expression we wrote. Call this A, this is A. times. So this expression is going to become V over R is equal to this average diode current. Looks like 1 over TS times the area of this triangle, which is 1/2 base times height. Where I can plug in for I peak, and I could say it's VG minus V over L times V2TS, this slope times this time, or VG over L times DTS. Use that first one, got one less term. And then that's my expression here. And I can, again, solve the conversion ratio, solve this expression for D2, plug in to eliminate D2 from V over VG, solve another quadratic equation, and I get now my conversion ratio, again, as a function of D and K, which is generally true in DCM. My conversion ratio is a function of both D and K. Note that when you apply the quadratic formula, you're going to get plus or minus. Only one of those solutions is going to work. The other is going to lead to negative output voltage in a converter that can't do that. Otherwise, some kind of contradiction of the switching operation of your converter. So if I look at this boost now, conversion ratio versus duty cycle, here I have this 427th limit. K is greater than that. This is my CCM solution. As K becomes smaller than that value, now I'll again jump between CCM and DCM. For a small enough K, I'll be in DCM always. My conversion ratio across the entire range of duty cycles is different than what it was in CCM. See, so the book has this nice table 5.2, which gives you summarized results. What is D2? What is the MOD? What is K crit? And then compares to CCM conversion ratios. Note that that's there. You're free to use that to, for example, check answers. Okay. So that's DCM. Okay. These expressions will be a little bit different depending on the converter, but the general process is the same. Only a functional difference is you have to actually go and take these integrals, figure out what are the time-varying signals, and integrate them by plotting or algebraically. Okay. So this DCM occurs in converters with non-four quadrant switches. When inductor current or capacitor voltage ripple is large enough to cause that switch to switch erroneously. Both of the cases we looked at, buck boost and the buck boost in your homework, is when I have a current bidirectional voltage unidirectional switch and the inductor current ripple is large, causing a diode to shut off. But it is possible to have voltage ripple on a cap going large enough to turn on a body diode of a MOSFET, since it's a voltage unidirectional device. That's still DCM, the dual of the case that we've looked at. Okay. So we do this by looking at the inductor current or cap voltage ripple and the average value. We can solve the conversion ratio through the same fundamental things, volt second and cap charge balance, but just need to be careful about where you can apply small ripple. When you don't apply, the expressions are moderately more difficult to evaluate, but not something you guys can't handle. Okay. And then the characteristics change significantly when the converter enters DCM. Some of those are beneficial, sometimes in DCM, the convert can be nice and easy to control, but it fundamentally changes, requiring that our control be able to react to this in order to regulate an output voltage. Okay. So on Friday, we'll have some time if there are any questions about this, and then we will move into chapter 6, which is looking at different converter topologies. Main new thing is going to be incorporating real transformers, not DC transformers, but incorporating a physical transformer into the converter topology. Okay. Talk to you then.